The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So in conversation with some people earlier this week, a comment about how the kind of crisis of this time has made it easier to let go of things that seem a little less crucial, you know, kind of in a way helps us to clarify our priorities sometimes. And what is really important comes to the surface in times of crisis. We let go of things that seem less necessary for basic, you know, sometimes even just basic survival, basic relationship. So this is a topic that I thought to reflect on this morning, and in thinking about it, I thought it comes really into the Buddhist teaching through the teaching of clear comprehension. So that's my understanding of some of the way that clear comprehension is reflected on in the suttas and in the commentaries. And so I thought just taking this word today and just reflecting on some different ways in which we can think about it and apply the sense of what clear comprehension is to our situation. You know, the Buddha had a question for his own life, his own journey around, is it possible to be free of suffering? You know, in many ways the teachings are framed almost as a medical model that the Buddha identified the ill of suffering and, you know, identified the First Noble Truth is, yes, this is the illness. Suffering is the illness. And not just unpleasant experience, not getting ill, not getting the coronavirus, for instance. That's not the definition of suffering that he was exploring or you know, Perhaps there's a piece of that, but just that the relationship, can the mind be at ease with whatever the situation is? I think that was his question. Maybe that's a way to frame the question around, is it possible for us to not suffer? Can we have ease in our hearts? Can we be at peace no matter the circumstances? Because we can't control everything that happens in our lives. And so this reflection on that question. And that the second noble truth is that there is a cause for this unease, the lack of peace, which is the craving or the wanting things to be other than they are, essentially. You know, the wanting to control, the feeling like we should be able to control. And so the second noble truth is really the cause, or the like here, if we think about the medical model, is this is the coronavirus. This is the cause here of this disease. It's the craving. It's the ignorance and the craving. And so then the third noble truth is that there is a possibility for cure. It is possible to find peace. And then the fourth noble truth is the prescription, the path, what leads us towards this cure. Now this this medical model, you know, it's amazing to me that 2,600 years ago the Buddha identified in the structure of the human mind what is the like linchpin that causes or that is the key linchpin that is how the suffering is put together in our system, and that if that linchpin shifts or is pulled out, then the suffering falls apart. It's amazing to me that he understood the human psyche so well. And this is not a cure, like, you know, it's not like a cure for a specific kind of suffering. I mean, it's the suffering of of reactivity. It's like whatever situation is happening, this shift in our minds around ignorance and craving, the release from ignorance and craving, will create the conditions for ease and peace. And so the teachings, the fourth noble truth, the truth of the Eightfold Path, the prescription of what allows us to feel, to find our way towards this release from suffering, to find our way towards ease and peace. This is not like finding the cure for the coronavirus. It's much more broadly applicable. And so the cure that he offered is a cure for times of crisis, and it's a cure for times of minor irritation. It's widely applicable, this teaching, this path. And so looking at how does this teaching relate to our situation right now? And I think in our situation right now, at times of crisis, we really can have some curiosity because of the nature of crisis, how we begin to pare down what is essential in our lives and look at what our priorities are. It's a real opportunity for us to frame and look at our choices, our intentions, and our motivations through this lens of what allows us to become more at ease, more at peace in our lives. So the teaching on clear comprehension, the Pali term for that, sampajanya, is used. It's a word that's often translated as clear comprehension, but also translated as full awareness, full alertness, things like that. That there's different senses of the meaning of the word that come in with the different translations. It's often found, some of the main place that the teaching is found is in the Satipatthana Sutta, the Buddha's teaching on mindfulness. And so it's intimately connected with the tool in the Eightfold Path of Wise Mindfulness. We can think of the Eightfold Path as eight parts of the prescription for letting go of suffering, of finding our way to ease and peace. Wise mindfulness is a key aspect of that. It's one of the foundational pieces. It's like the wise mindfulness is needed to support the other aspects of the Eightfold Path. So the clear comprehension is a piece of wise mindfulness. It's used in that teaching in a couple of different ways. One is that it's used in the definition of what mindfulness, of wise mindfulness, actually is. The definition of wise mindfulness is given as one abides contemplating experience as experience, body is body, feeling is feeling, states of mind as states of mind. One contemplates experience as experience, ardent, fully aware, clearly comprehending, and mindful. Now, that doesn't say what clearly comprehending is. It just says that with wise mindfulness, we need to be clearly comprehending. So, okay, let's dive a little deeper. Another place that the word is used is in another section of the Satipatthana Sutta, where it describes engagement with our daily lives. And this is another reason I love this particular teaching, because it's kind of a pointing towards how do we engage not just in sitting meditation, but in everything. And in this place, the teaching reads, the section is in the mindfulness of the body aspect of wise mindfulness. And then the Buddha says, when going forward and returning, one acts in full awareness, or one employs clear comprehension. When going forward and returning, one makes oneself fully alert. When looking toward and looking away, when bending and extending one's limbs, when carrying one's outer cloak, this is talking in a monastic, when carrying our clothes, when eating, drinking, chewing, savoring, one acts with full awareness. When urinating and defecating, when walking, standing, sitting, falling asleep, waking up, talking, and remaining silent, one makes oneself fully alert. Now again, this doesn't describe what it means to be fully alert, but it encourages us to do it all the time. So, you know, it's like, it's not just in sitting meditation. It's, you know, urinating and defecating are in here. This is like, wow, you know, it's like, okay, yes, everything. When talking and when keeping silent, when moving one's limbs, when walking, standing, sitting, falling asleep, waking up, this encompasses all of our activities in some form or other. We're doing one of these things in our day. Now, it doesn't say while sleeping, and yet, you know, that's an interesting other topic for another time, perhaps. You know, the possibility that this kind of mindfulness can enter into sleep. But anyway, we won't go into that today. You know, so again, it's encouraging us to engage in this with our mindfulness practice in the first place. So abide with mindfulness, clearly comprehending, is in the very definition, as knowing experience as experience. It's in the very definition of mindfulness. But it's also he's also encouraging us to engage with this clear comprehension throughout our daily activities. And still, again, it's not, you know, it's not defined. And yet, I think this description of in all our activities gives us a little bit of the importance of the continuity, and the teaching of wise mindfulness, the Satipatthana Sutta, that word Satipatthana. Often translated as foundation of mindfulness. Another translation Bhikkhu Naliyo uses is establishment of mindfulness. And I like that understanding in that, you know, as mindfulness gets established, what establishment of mindfulness is where the mindfulness is more available, has more continuity through all of our activities. And so this aspect of the teaching pointing to, yes, bring this clear comprehension to whatever you're doing. So the continuity of attention is important. Now, another piece that's important is starting to go a little bit more into the word. There's a couple other places in the suttas that the word is used. They give a little bit more of a sense of what the word means. One place is an interesting usage of the word. It's when he's talking to his son and telling him that he needs to take care with his words and in his speaking, and that anybody who tells a deliberate lie is going down the wrong path. You know, that this is a very unwholesome thing to do. And he says, if you tell a deliberate lie, which means basically you know you're telling a lie, right? That in English, that's what we would use, that word, you know, the word deliberate. The word that's translated as deliberate in that teaching to his son is this word sampajanya. And so this is interesting in that it's this word's clear comprehension is used both in the wholesome and in the unwholesome. So clear comprehension is a kind of a neutral word. It's applied to lying. And in that kind of phrase, you know, if you are clearly comprehending that you're lying, you know you're lying when you're lying. And so that's a piece of the aspect of what clear comprehension is. It's a deliberateness. It is a knowing what's happening, a being aware. There's the So that's perhaps why it's sometimes translated as full awareness. You know, it's like we know that we're lying when we're lying, or we know that we're walking when we're walking. We know that we're speaking when we're speaking. That's perhaps the sense one of the senses of the meaning of the word, the deliberateness, the awareness that we are aware while something is happening. And so this brings in that sense of conscious attention or consciously being aware. And yet in the guided meditation, I was talking about a receptive awareness as opposed to a directed awareness. And I think we can still be clearly comprehending even if we're not choosing what to attend to, because we can clearly know. So the deliberateness, I think, doesn't have to be my choice of what to be attending to, but it is clearly aware that this is what the attention is with. So there's a kind of a deliberateness there, a sense of aware that I am aware. So that's one piece of the word, is this deliberateness. In the context of Satipatthana, in the context of wise mindfulness, I think there is another piece of the definition, or another piece in another place in the suttas, that talks about how we should clearly comprehend. And this, I think, really brings it to the why, to the wisdom aspect of clear comprehension. He says that, and how does one clearly comprehend? So this really gives it, it gets right to the point. He says, "With clear comprehension, one understands feelings, thoughts, and perceptions are understood as they arise, persist, and pass away." And so this brings in an understanding of the impermanent nature of experience, particularly around our feelings, thoughts, and perceptions. And so in relationship to if we applied this to the prior description of all activities, when going forward and returning, one understands feelings, thoughts, and perceptions as they arise, persist, and pass away. When eating, drinking, one understands feelings, thoughts, and perceptions as they arise, persist, and pass away. When walking, one understands feeling, thoughts, and perceptions as they arise, persist, and pass away. This brings in a whole different level of awareness. We're not just aware of the body anymore. It's aware of the body and the context of what's going on in our minds and the impermanent nature of those feelings, thoughts, and perceptions. And so this brings in an understanding of what's going on in our minds. So those are some of the pieces that are framed in the suttas around this word. The commentaries take it a little bit further in a way, and I think maybe unpack perhaps some of these teachings from the suttas and give a kind of a different way into understanding clear comprehension. They talk about four aspects of clear comprehension and say that the term points to comprehending in terms of how it's applied in the Satipatthana Sutta, I believe, is what they're speaking to here. The term points to comprehending how our activities support connecting with the understanding of the Dharma. So this teaching of clear comprehension from the commentarial perspective, and they give four aspects. How purposeful is this activity in relationship to the Dharma? How suitable is it in relationship to the Dharma? Is the range or the domain of what is being attended to within the field of the Dharma? And are the understandings that are coming, the understandings, are they related to the understanding of impermanent, unreliable, and not self. So the four are framed as clear comprehension of purpose, clear comprehension of suitability, clear comprehension of domain, and clear comprehension of reality or of non-delusion. The piece I'd most like to explore right now, and I only want to talk for another, 10 minutes or so, and then open it up for a kind of conversation, a little of a conversation, is the part about suitability and purpose, because this is where the exploration around, I think that the exploration around what is important comes in. You know, what are our priorities? How do we engage in our activities? And so the teaching around suitability and purpose with respect to clear comprehension is kind of about how are our activities aligned with the Dharma? Are they aligned with the Dharma? So in some ways, I think of the purpose and suitability as being kind of about the context in which we are practicing, in which we are engaged in our activities. The content of what we're doing, is this activity? So we're not just talking about, am I being mindful in this moment? But is the bigger aim of my life, the bigger aim, the purpose, the intention, the motivation of what I'm doing, is it aligned with the Dharma? And so we can perhaps consider this in our activities, and maybe this is a really good time to reflect on this, because our activities have been perhaps pared down to the essential. And maybe we're, aware perhaps at times of how our activities connect with the Dharma, or maybe it feels like what we're doing is all like just survival mode and it's not connected with the Dharma. So how is this connected? How do we relate to this understanding of clear comprehension in connection with what we're doing? I think some of the reflections we can explore, first of all, it's useful, I think, to look at what is our bigger picture? What is our broader aspiration for our lives? And this, in terms of the Dharma, this maybe has two basic threads in a way. One, a thread of being, understanding our own minds so that we can find our way towards that ease, that peace, the letting go, the freedom from dukkha, the freedom from greed, aversion, delusion, those reactive qualities in the mind that create that stress, that tension that the Buddha found that it's possible to be free from. So this is one thread of kind of a priority perhaps for us in terms of the Dharma, is what supports that? What supports a movement towards understanding that freedom? Another thread that I think is a useful thread, the thread not only of equanimity, of understanding, but also the thread of the heart, the connection, the relational, the thread of love, of compassion, of connectivity. That so these threads of like, how are these in relation to my life? What are my priorities in relation to these, to kindness and wisdom? And so it may be useful in your life, right now perhaps is a time to reflect on what are my deepest aspirations? What is my aim? What is my purpose? How do I wish my life to be led? Because I think that this exploration in the commentaries is holding, not just a moment-to-moment looking at, am I aware right now? But in the bigger picture, what is the aim? What is the direction of our lives? And so a reflection on this can be useful. Are our aims in relationship to the Dharma? We might start by reflecting on what are the things I'd like to do in my life, and then in that, so that's one piece of an aspiration is looking at the activities, and then are those activities. And this is where the teaching of suitability comes in. I think the purpose is kind of looking at the broader picture, the aspiration, the direction. And then the suitability is looking at those activities. Are they imbued with the intention and the motivation of the Dharma? Because activities can be neutral. You know, we can do something with an intention towards kindness and connection and understanding and wisdom, and we can do something just to do it. Or we can do something with a kind of an attitude of wanting to get as much as I can out of the situation, a greed, or an attitude of wanting to control or manipulate something. And so there's many motivations that come into play as we explore where we want to go with our lives. And so that's a piece. First is the piece of what are our aspirations, and then the reflection on suitability asks us to look at what's our motivation. How are we in relationship to our activities in our lives? And so, you know, I think we can have the possibility of kind of clarifying or refining not only our broader aspirations, but also those underlying intentions and motivations. So, for instance, you know, a simple example. What are the things that we have to do? You know, there's the broader aspiration is maybe a greater direction for our lives, and there's a lot of little steps that we have to do, little things that we have to do to get there. You know, little things like taking care of our bodies. You know, like taking a shower or, you know, having a meal or going grocery shopping. And so those things are not, you know, in this exploration of suitability, those things are suitable for the larger aspiration. They're not throwaway. Especially if we're curious about how can we bring a Dharma perspective into those activities. It's important in the suitability reflection to hold the understanding of ethics, to not be engaged in taking life and harming other beings. So that's an important aspect of the suitability reflection too. If it's harming, then at a deeper level, it's understood to not be suitable. If it's kind of feels neutral, like going grocery shopping or taking a shower, you know, it's like, well, yes, okay, it seems kind of neutral, but this is a piece that allows my body to be healthy and engage in the larger activity. So it's suitable. And so how do I bring mindfulness into that? How do I bring the Dharma into that? And so, you know, this is an interesting exploration. So the first reflection I encourage you to look at is the kind of the reflection on what are my aspirations. And this reflection is a little bit more of like, how can this very activity be connected with the Dharma, be connected with the practice? And so an example of like going grocery shopping, seemingly neutral activity, and it can be a neutral activity. But if we are engaged in that with the sense of this is supportive for my own well-being, this is supportive for the well-being of my family, that I buy food that is wholesome, that I support myself and my family with this nourishment, so that the bigger picture can unfold. There's a way in which we can, it's almost like looking at it as generosity to ourselves. We are being kind and generous, so we're bringing in that other thread, the kindness, the generosity to ourselves. And in the shopping, you know, being kind to everybody. I mean, it's a real adventure going to the store these days, I find. You know, I often have to wait in line, you know, to get in. And then in the store, you know, most of the stores around here at least have these arrows on the floor. You know, you've got to be really alert to which direction you're going down the aisle. And to be patient, you know, I'm finding patience is helpful in the store because people do not see these these arrows and they're coming the other way. So you're, you know, so there's lots of opportunities in the store for holding kindness and compassion, to recognize how frayed everyone is and offering some wishes of kindness, to give somebody space. The other day I was in the store and there was a man who seemed to be having some trouble deciding on which item he wanted, and he was blocking the whole aisle, and I decided to just stand there and practice, you know, some compassion for him at the time, and just wait. Just so at this point, you know, one of the framings for going to the store for me is understanding this is going to take time. This is something, so I'm going to take my practice with me, and it's going to be, you know, an exercise in being aware of what I, you know, what I meet. So this is a way that this activity can be suitable. It brings, it's suitable and purposeful then. You know, it not only supports our health, but it also supports our minds to orient towards the wisdom and the compassion that are the kind of the infusion that into mindfulness that makes it aim in the direction of the freedom from suffering. To become the wise, for the wise mindfulness to actually become that cure for the illness of suffering. And I'll just briefly mention these last two pieces of domain and non-delusion. The domain piece is really, you know, I think about that as being the encouragement towards awareness of whatever's happening. The word domain is kind of like field. It means field, like where cows would graze. And so it's like, what is the field of our attention? Are we clearly comprehending the field of our attention? And that's the entirety of our experience. Everything that happens to us is the field of our attention. Nyanaponika has a beautiful phrase that's a great reflection just to remind ourselves of and carry with us when we go to the store, when we're making dinner, when we're lying down to bed, when we're taking a shower. The phrase he uses is, how can the practice of mindfulness be done with these very circumstances? This is the clear comprehension of domain. All experience is the domain of our practice. And then the clear comprehension of non-delusion, this is really I think of this as the result of practice. This is the insight, the understanding that comes through the practice of the first three kinds of clear comprehension, through the practice of wise mindfulness imbued with wisdom and compassion. The understanding that impermanent, experience is impermanent, unreliable, not worthy of being clung to. That's the ignorance that gets uprooted, that we think there is something worthy of clinging to for happiness. And the understanding of the impermanent nature of experience helps us to realize there's nothing that can be clung to. Trying to cling to it is an exercise in futility and create stress, create suffering. And so these are the understandings that result through the seeing, through the willingness to engage in our mindfulness practice, through our experience, in all activities. So I just wanted to, open it up to questions. I'm recording this on my phone. So probably, and because you're speaking into this, I will, just try to summarize your question, because the The phone won't hear your questions, so I'll just kind of summarize if there's any comments or questions or reflections that you'd like to share on this topic. I mean, I'm curious if this is up for you in terms of looking at your, you know, what's important right now. It seems a very natural reflection. Oh, great. I'm glad. I mean, I think just to say for the recording what you said, just that it like thinking about all the different kinds of things you do during the day, it's really kind of inspiring to think about how, reflecting in this way, how it brings a lot of curiosity and delight. And it sounds like some joy from the way you said it, you know, some joy in just like, oh, yeah, it's like even these little things, the Dharma's here. Yeah. Great, thanks. Yeah. You're welcome. I have some reflections that I kind of wrote. Let me just read these reflections to you, see if they're useful, and actually maybe I could post them with the talk. I just post this page of reflections around each of these clear comprehensions. I did a non-residential retreat on this theme and included these reflections scattered through the retreat. Taking some time to reflect on your aspirations for your life. What are your highest aspirations and ideals? How does your practice support those aspirations? And which of your daily activities directly support those aspirations? So that's one. And then I won't read all of them, but the second one around purpose and priorities and aspiration is, what are the priorities by which you actually live your life? This is an interesting reflection. You know, it's like, it's amazing when we start to look at the priorities that we actually use, they may not be actually in line with our highest aspiration. So kind of looking at, sometimes we live by priorities that aren't fully acknowledged. So this is a little bit of a dive into what are the priorities that by which we live our life. And is there a way in which those priorities are connected, or can they be connected, or can they be in line with your deepest aspiration? Sometimes they are, sometimes they're not. If there's a kind of conflict, you know, let yourself just hold that. You know, don't have to beat yourself up about it, but let yourself hold, oh gee, there's this kind of feels like a conflict by the priorities by which I'm living my life and my deepest aspiration. So that's something to sit with for a while, rather than to like immediately try to figure out. And then the other one is the, you know, just taking some time to reflect on the activities that you do during your week. And though they may not be directly related or seemingly not directly related to your deepest aspiration, you know, be honest about those activities that are kind of necessary and those that are unnecessary. Now, the unnecessary part can use some reflection too, when we think something might be unnecessary. Like I find these days, I do take some time to, I do some puzzles. I like doing puzzles. And it seems to like use a different part of my brain. And, you know, it doesn't seem directly supportive towards my bigger aspiration, but it seems to give my brain a different kind of activity that seems helpful for my larger ability to do the things that I do. So so it's like, okay, I'm just kind of letting that be, you know, and just holding it as, okay, well that's a piece of my day, and it's not the most suitable thing in terms of getting to my larger aspiration, but it feels like there's something that's like happening underneath that I'm not so clear about. So let's just like, let's not judge this. Let's just sit with that. Let's explore what's going on there. So be honest about, you know, those pieces. But then again, see if you can just hold or not judge the, you know, not judge that there may be seeming conflict there. And for those that there is, you know, that they are kind of they're purposeful in terms of, like, the living of life, like the preparation of food, and it's like, how can the, you know, what could be a motivation, a dharma intention that can be, like, explored in that activity? So, yeah. And just a couple more minutes, so if this is... That's a beautiful way to reflect. So just, again, to speak to the... Since you can't be heard on the recording, I'll put this out there. It's like, you were saying that a way into this exploration is... to reflect on what nourishes that larger aspiration. And did you use the word detracts? What detracts from that larger aspiration? Yeah, that's a great way to reflect on it. And sometimes we can feel into, you know, the kind of the systemic feeling of that. Is there a sense of relaxation and openness and connection that comes, or is there a sense of contraction? You know, so that's another way into feeling. Is this nourishing? Or is it detracting? Yeah. Thank you for that. That's great. Thanks. And it's time to stop. So thank you for being here this morning. And I'm starting to get a little more comfortable with this kind of teaching. Thank you.